Simple orders, Hal. Find the enemy and kill him.
They attack us. No casualties. They're running hide in the mountains. So naturally, we chase them, of course. They smell like an ambush to you.
They get close enough to kill us, we'll be close enough to kill them.
Round trip by chopper, 30 minutes. That means the first 60 men on the ground will be there a half hour alone. Son of a bitch. Think maybe you ought to get yourself that M16.
Time comes I need one, sir. There'll be plenty of them lying on the ground.
People of America, listen to me. I bring you news. I bring you candidates. Listen to these 18. These 18. Three Republican candidates. It's been a while since we've done a show, guys. How you doing?
Our last show was 15 Republican presidential candidates ago. Well,
that's how you measure time now.
Who dropped out this week? Yeah.
Nobody. Nobody's dropped out in a few weeks. It's just...
Hey, remember Jim Webb and Lincoln Chaffee?
What? No, I don't remember Tuesday.
It's been a while. It's when was the last show we did? Last July, I think.
Yeah. You know what? Because I was looking in the chat history and
could have had a baby since then.
Day.
We oh, that's how you that's how you measure this. You go back in the chat history. It's like
we actually did have a baby, and that's Ben's on maternity leave, and that's why he's not here tonight. Yeah. You're not here. It has to happen, even if it's been forever since the last show.
Yeah, yes. But that just wasn't funny.
Oh.
So,
literally nothing has changed. Ben's not here. I'm not funny.
So how you guys been the last few months? I know we've had quite a bit of life change here.
Yeah, I know, right?
Noam, you moved.
I did. I moved to our nation's capital.
The Washington, D.C. metro area.
Indeed. Yeah,
just, are you actually living in Washington, or are you in one of the...
I am actually living in Washington. I'm the only person I know around here that actually lives in the district. Nobody lives here. Everybody lives in Maryland or Virginia.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I make a lot of money because it costs a crap ton of money to live here. I just don't make a metric crap ton of money so I can live out in Virginia.
Exactly.
You can't live in the capital of America and make a metric ton of money. That would be wrong.
Yeah, it's imperial.
It's imperial.
I'm taking an imperial amount of money.
Wow.
Cubits of money, gallons of money. Acres of money.
Hectares.
Isn't that metric, though?
I don't even know. I remember from an old bit about the Amish from 20 years ago, I think on MTV's The State.
Oh, wow. I remember that show.
Yeah, it just went pretty obscure right there.
I still remember they had a really funny skit about people who eat Muppets. And they wanna, that's their diet is they eat Muppets. And the way they catch them is they do something they kind of, one looks at the other and goes how do you tell the difference between near and far? And then one of the pops up and goes like, I'll tell you. And they grab it and cook it and eat it. They're like, how do you count to 10? Like one pops up like, let's do the counting song.
Vaguely remember something like that. My favorite one was always the dude Doug, who was like too cool for everything, but it turned out like his family was way cooler than he was. Like he'd be sitting there arguing with his dad, and it turns out his dad's like a record producer and he rides a Harley with the Hells Angels, but his kids all trying to rebel against him and like, yo, you're not cool, dad. You don't understand what it's like to be Doug. He's like, well, Doug, do you want me to sell my hog and quit the Hells Angels and spend more time with you, son? Is that what you want? No, dad, I don't want that. I don't need you to give up your stupid job. Like, you mean my job producing Bob Dylan's new record? Oh, wait, you mean Uncle Bobby?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, dude, it's really good. If you get a chance to look some of their stuff up. I used to love that show when I was, gosh dang it, in my teen years.
I noticed something that hasn't changed in 9 months.
What?
Neil's sound quality.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out during that 9 month break, I never really upgraded my mic or anything yet.
Right.
Well, who would have thought that not doing this wouldn't have spurred you to upgrade your gear?
You know, and I was just thinking about that the other day. I'm like, one of these weeks we're going to record again and I'm still going to sound shitty.
Well, you know, the funny thing is remember we couldn't do a show for like a month or, you know, because things were going on. And then finally somebody said, I think it was me, they said, why don't we just not do it anymore?
Yeah,
and then
I got a little tired.
Right, and Neil's like, that sounds like a good idea. And Noam's like, well, I haven't been here most weeks anyway. And Ben's like, huh? You know, so it just fell off for a few months. And then finally I said, okay, I'm getting ready to pull the plug, guys. The website's going down. And all of a sudden, I think it was Neil that said, no, wait.
Well, yeah, because then we had kicked around the idea of like, well, why don't we just make it a really informal thing when we can get at least three of us or two and a guest, and we'll do it. And I said, you know what? We've had a pretty long break. That actually sounds like a pretty good idea. So let's try to do that.
Right.
And we've been trying that for what, a little over a month now.
Yeah.
I know. Right as we decided it, I had a whole bunch of family shit, and I know it was like, it's almost like we made the decision at the worst possible time. Like, we should have made the decision like now, like yesterday should have been the day where Frank was like, hey, why don't we try and do this now? And then we would have been like, oh, cool. I'm free tomorrow. Awesome. This worked out awesome.
Friday? I've got nothing Friday.
You got the idea too early.
Right. So what were, I have a spider in my face. Shit.
Not anymore. Yet.
Not anymore.
God.
Wow. Anyway, what we're trying to say, ladies and gentlemen, spiders are bad. No.
Spiders are bad, okay.
Yeah. What we're trying to say is that don't count on a weekly show. We're going to try, but we're not going to kill ourselves to do it.
Yeah, once in a while. I mean, it's also like, I also think that on top of everything, the last several months have been characterized by despair and depression. And like, we would have done shows like, yep, we're still with this shit.
Right.
It would have just been beers cracking and just like every 5 seconds, like a motherfucker.
A lot of sighing.
Again, didn't we just, we talk? It's amazing how prophetic, because I've been listening to some of the older shows, and it's like, it's amazing how prophetic we were. We're like, we called that a year and a half ago, and now it's happening.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think it's kind of weird how many people sort of saw something like this coming, but it was almost said half sarcastically because of how crazy the idea sounded, even to the people who were predicting it. I mean, nobody was like, oh, Trump's going to become president. But, you know, and other people also just talking about how, you know, this is all heading towards like a really crazy shit.
Well, I think last show that we did was the one where I was pissed off that Trump insulted veterans because of McCain.
Yeah,
remember
was
that
it when he
because I remember I'm like, I'm out. And it's just gotten worse.
It's way downhill from there.
But people are like, Trump is anti-establishment. Trump could not have made $9 billion being anti-establishment.
He just got endorsed by John Boehner.
Yes. And, you know, and like he's defending Mitch McConnell. And he has, I mean, it's, and on top of that, it's like.
You know, the thing that scares me the most about him.
You just started sighing all
night. Yeah, I lose steam. I get like all worked up and then like, I just go like.
The thing that scares me the most about him is that 9 months later, he still has all of these grand ideas, but his answer when you push him for any kind of information on how he's going to do anything, he says, I'm not going to tell you.
You're very correct. I think I think I said this after one of the debates, is that the thing that bothers me most about him, more than all of the bullshit about he's a racist and he's a misogynist, all that crap, is how vague he is about everything. This whole idea of like, we're going to win. We're going to win so much. The winning is going to be coming out of your ears. You're gonna be saying, where am I going to put all this winning? My cupboard's so full of winning. I got no more place to put all my winning.
Well, on top of that, he's
gotta rent a storage unit for all of my winning.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, he's Trump the insult politician.
He's Triumph.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton's a great candidate for me to poop on.
I'm surprised he hasn't said it.
You know, there might be a hand up my ass, but Ted Cruz, your head is up yours.
That's a good Triumph impression. I love it. Love it.
We will build a wall.
Yeah. How are you going to pay for it? Tariffs. Yeah.
Mexico's going to pay for it.
That's what
how?
I mean.
I don't know.
Mexico can't pay for Mexico. We'll figure that out.
Yeah. We'll invite
them to dinner and then run away and stiff them with the bill. And write down, add in a pencil. It'll be like beer $9, you know, burger $15. And then like in pen, it'll be written out like wall 500 billion. You'd be like, hey, Mexico, I gotta go to the bathroom.
I'll be right back.
Mexico, you had the three Dos Equis, you split the strip platter, and you got the wall, right? Okay, here's your check.
A Harvey wall banger. Hold the Harvey banger.
Guys, a great idea. Since you're in town, we're going to the Great Wall Chinese Buffet. $5 billion.
But yeah, like people are just
We're taking a trip to China. I need to show you something.
it's like I would almost understand.
Look at this blueprints.
I would almost understand this if I felt like these people were getting behind someone who would actually. Like, who actually thinks these things and would actually do them. Like, if I don't know, like, if Rick Perry or someone like that became, like, the darling of the disenfranchised Republican voters or whatever, at least I'd be like, okay, but he's not honest. And there's, you know what? I think there's more to it than that. Like, I think the people who go like, oh, Trump's a result of the Republican voters are just, you know, they've had it with the GOP establishment and all that. I think there's way more in play than that. I think there's at least two other factors. One of which is that Obama went so long without being called out that now anytime the media tries to call out Trump on a scandal, his supporters see that as a, like as an attempt to trash him and not as some kind of rational criticism, even if it is rational criticism.
I went to his website.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking to see if he has any actual plans.
Well, he mentioned them a little. He had a speech on Thursday. day, like a foreign policy speech. That's actually what I wanted to speak about, because he said a lot of bullshit there, but there was one thing he said that really made me mad, which was that he was taught, he said, like, we still use the B-52 bombers. Like, what the fuck's up with that? Like, our military's old and stuff. And I was thinking to myself, like, the reason we still use B-52s is because they're still fucking awesome.
Because they still fucking work.
Yes. And we've upgraded them. Like, they don't have avionics from the 50s. Like, they're all super modern inside and stuff. And also, the idea that just because something's been around for a while it means it needs replacing is a really bad, like, wasteful strategy. Yeah. Just look at the fucking F-35.
I was going to say.
Look at the fucking Comanche. Like, it's just like stuff we've had before that is still around and still, you know, it's like this is going to be a really weird comparison, but the Atari 2600, Atari tried to make a replacement for that, the 5200, and it failed miserably. And the 2600 continued for years after that, was still popular when its, like, new, quote unquote, newer replacement came and went. It's like something's fucking working. Don't try to make a new one just because. Like, there was a good story also about the A-10 recently, where I believe Congress was like, well, look, we're not going to decommission the A-10 until you prove to us that the F-35 isn't a piece of junk. Like, the A-10 works fine. You know what I mean? It's like a big gun with wings, you know? It's a very simple idea.
It is exactly what it is.
Yeah. And as I was saying, it's like, it's a very simple, you don't need, you know, VTOL and crazy fly-by-wire computers and shit. It's just a big gun with some wings and an engine, and it does the job. But yeah, like that to me was weird, because he was in the same breath, like, talking about wastefulness and how, like, we can't waste another dollar. And then another one is like, oh, we're going to renew all our military. Now, I understand the benefit of, you know, like, modernizing things in the military that need modernizing, but you got to be smart about it. Don't just talk bullshit. That's my problem with him. He just says stuff that sort of sounds okay if you don't take 5 seconds to kind of think about it. It's all very, like, superficially sounding stuff, like, oh, I'm going to negotiate better trade deals. I'm going to, you know, if our friends don't blah, 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 then they're not going to be our friends anymore. And it's like, it's this, like, chest thumpy, like, it's almost like something that you would say, you know, how, like, you're drunk around a campfire and you're like, you're going to turn it into the glass parking lot, dude.
He answers a lot of things like he's the kid in class that was totally unprepared and gets called on first.
But then he answers it in a way that makes all the other kids, like, laugh and clap. But
right. He's going to give everybody, you know, the vending machines are going to be free. You're going to get out of school before the last period's technically over. And, you know, you're going to have pizza for lunch every Friday.
Yeah. That's kind of also what Sanders is doing. Like, I got into a fight with, like, a Bernie guy on Twitter. I almost suspect that he was some kind of campaign operative, because I know there was actually a story about how Clinton has an army of these people who just go around, like, tweeting and Facebooking and stuff and going after people posting negative stuff about it, like, quote unquote, combating misinformation. But it's basically like an army of internet commenters. And I got suspicious that this guy was a Bernie version of that, because I was talking about how the top 20% of earners pay 80% of income tax. And he was like, no, that's not true. And I was like, yeah, it is. This isn't like a partisan. This is like the reality of a tax revenue. And he was like, no, you're spreading misinformation. I was like, okay, here's the proof. And he was like, yeah, that source is biased. And I was like, okay, here's another. No, that source is biased too. And I was like, but dude, this is like from the IRS. And he was like, well, no, but you're wrong, because there's loopholes and they effectively pay no taxes. I was like, but this is the tax revenue data. This is like after they already get, this is like the analysis of the money that they received from people, not the money they're supposed to receive. So, like, if they had paid no taxes, there wouldn't be tax revenue from those people. No, you're wrong. No, you're spreading misinformation. Like, and I'm just like, it's so sad. Like, these people have been sold, like, this pack of lies.
Yeah.
And they really sadly believe it, and then also are in, like, horrific amounts of denial when confronted with the fact that it's not true. And I think that also helps sort of the Trump phenomenon, because I even I get this, because I'm very opposed to the idea of voting for Trump. Like, I don't want to, not because, you know, because this whole idea of like, oh, we got to stop Hillary or whatever. I'm like, look, I can't vote for someone I don't agree with almost anything that he says.
That's where
just
I'm at.
To not elect someone else who I don't agree with almost anything that she says. You know, in fact, I actually think that Hillary, for people who dislike Trump on the right, I think it would be good for Trump to run for president and lose really, really badly to kind of eliminate the possibility of this happening in 4 years again. Because if they hand the nomination to Cruz, like in a second round ballot, like a contested convention, his supporters are going to spend 4 years feeling like they were robbed, and we're just going to have a replay of this shit next time. I think it's important to let it play out. Like, you want this? Okay, fine. You own it. And then you own this failure. And then next time you can't say like, well, you know what I mean? Like, you want the rudder? Fine. You take it. But then when you inevitably fail, that's on you.
Well, I think his biggest problem is that his only response to not winning the nomination outright is for everybody else to drop out, because even though he's not winning enough, he's still winning.
It's weird because it's hard for me to argue with his fans about this, because they also seem to not understand the realities involved here, because they think there's this misconception that his support is like this crazy groundswell, and that's actually not true at all. I mean, Romney had more than twice as much support as he did in the primary.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't personally know anybody that is a Trump supporter. You would think I would know one. Just like I haven't met anybody that's a Hillary supporter, but yet they're winning. I guess that's what I get for living in the Midwest.
Well, it's a big country, right? But so look, now polls have been notoriously inaccurate in recent years, but looking at the amount of people that have actually voted for him, that's not polls. That's hard data. If he can't even get 50% of primary voters to support him.
And well, exactly, primary voters, you know, he's getting roughly 35% of the vote.
Yes, which by my rough guesstimation is about 1% of all voters.
Exactly, because that's 35 of like 10% that vote.
I think 10% vote in both parties.
Right.
So, and roughly half of voters are, you know, Republican and half are Democrat. You know, this is like just ballparking, right?
Yeah, super simplifying.
So yeah, effectively that's very, very few people. And I truly think that there's a bunch of candidates here that would have long ago put this to bed if it was a two-man race very early on. Like, first of all, Kasich spoiled shit for Rubio a bunch of times. He spoiled shit for Cruz a bunch of other times. There were too many candidates in. And also, I think a lot of people underestimated the danger that he posed and focused on fighting each other. I mean, Jeb Bush spent $100 million attacking just Rubio.
Right. The biggest problem that we ran into on the Republican side is that there was just too many people in it at the beginning. Nobody could, you know, the loudest mouth in the room was going to, I think I said it a few times, like, the only reason Donald was in front at the beginning is because he was sucking all the air out of the room.
And also, he had the benefit of being an outsider and being able to just say whatever he wanted, never, never apologize for anything.
Well, exactly. Because, well, he learned well from his years of reality TV. It was, make the conversation about me, because anytime he would say something outrageous, the first thing the media did would go to all the other candidates and said, what do you think about what Trump just said?
That's very true. And there was a great article in Politico yesterday about how a lot of people in news media are, you know, just, they don't know what to do. Like, their bosses just want Trump, 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 because he has saved network news ratings and also cable news ratings that have been just terrible for years. And all of a sudden, people are tuning in because Trump says crazy shit. Les Moonves, the president of CBS, said Trump may be bad for America, but he's good for CBS.
Right.
Head of CNN says the same thing. So what they do is they air all of his pressers live and uncut because he might say something crazy. And if he does, oh, that's awesome. We got sound bites and people are watching. And also, they're afraid of him shutting them out. So if he wants to call instead of, you know, call in instead of show up, then they let him. They let him do whatever he wants. They play by his rules. And a lot of people who cover politics for these networks are like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can't do my job because my bosses are too like enthralled by this idea of a, you know, this ratings driver, this ratings monster.
Exactly.
And that's really bad. Like, I think the media's blame in this is much bigger than a lot of people realize. Of course, because what are the media going to do? Blame themselves? Mm-hmm. They're never to blame for anything.
This is the first election that I remember, and I've been around for a few, where it's so damn polarizing. I mean, even 4 years ago with Obama and Romney, yes, it was polarizing, but it wasn't vitriolic polarizing. You could still say, you know, there were times where you could say, okay, yeah, I don't like Obama, but I can see what he's saying. I can get behind that particular thing. You know, man, this is polarizing.
Even in within the parties themselves, like the rabid Bernie people hate Hillary Clinton. I mean, fucking hate her.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll give them a lot of credit because Bernie Sanders, at least unlike Hillary, because Hillary's talking about, you know, she's trying to act like she's a woman of the people and she's fucking whatever. And she's like, she is the fakest of the fake. I mean, really.
Right. And I've said that before, too. I said, you know, I might not agree with hardly anything Bernie says, but at least when I listen to him, I get the feeling that he's telling me what he actually believes.
That's true. That's very true. And interestingly enough, like I heard someone on another political podcast say something really interesting, and that's that the one good thing about Sanders is that he is showing that people on even on the left, like even on the far left, are more enchanted now by an idea than by an identity. Like they'd rather go with the idea of like a sort of a socialist utopia than the idea of electing a woman president, which was a big thing that moved the pro-Obama movement, was the fact that they had this fantasy of electing a black man. And also, you know, obviously he was the right guy. It wasn't just any guy. He was very charismatic and he said all the right things and stuff. But like his identity was a big driver of his sort of rabid popularity. And now people are like, woman president, whatever. I'd rather go old white guy if his ideas appeal to me more. And I think that's good because it's easier to convince someone that an idea is wrong than it is to get them off of like identity politics. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot easier to say to someone socialism doesn't work than, you know, don't elect this black guy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like you can't just, yeah, because you don't get anywhere with the, well, this woman would be a horrible, because she's a woman, she can't be president.
Right.
And like, well, no, but yes, but no, but yes.
Right. And she's trying all of the tricks that Obama tried and it's not working. It's not working because it's her. Because it's her. Because this idea of like, oh, poor me, Donald Trump's bullying me and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like nobody's falling for that shit, really, especially not when the left was, you know, just as vitriolic about, you know, women, Republican women. Carly Fiorina got a lot of the same kind of stuff thrown at her, let alone like Sarah Palin and fucking what's her name? Christine O'Donnell. But also Nikki Haley, a lot of like Republican women get attacked horribly in the same way. So now it's just falls flat. This whole, they're just trying the same strategy and it's not really working.
Yeah, my biggest problem with her is that she's really only been in charge of something twice.
And neither time worked. It wasn't great.
Exactly.
Like, she wasn't very good at either of them. You know, she wasn't any... There's no good record.
Who would you rather have? Remember this argument 4 years ago when she was up. Who would you rather have take that call at 3 o'clock in the morning? Well, you took the call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you failed.
Yeah,
horribly.
Well, look, I also the thing about Hillary is I think, and it's not just me. You know, there's the sense that her biggest motivating factor is that she feels like she deserves to be president.
Exactly. I mean, that's the one thing I can say about Obama over Hillary, even when they ran 8 years ago, is that at least Obama is smart enough to realize that he doesn't know everything.
Well, not now. I think now he's graduated to thinking that he knows everything now. But
well, he can do that. He can do that now because he's on his way out. And
yeah,
and every president does that in the last year of their. You know, that's when they try to get everything that they couldn't do over the last 7 years. You know, but I mean, even you know, 8 years ago, at least he was smart enough. You know, the feeling that I got from him is he was smart enough to say, "Yeah, I don't know everything. That's what I have advisors and policymakers and." Chiefs of staff and cabinet members for Hillary strikes me as the kind of person that's just basically tell all those people, look, you're here just to make me look better.
It just feels like her.
Yeah, very much about image.
Yeah. And well, it's, and her whole thing is like, it's my turn. That's basically the idea that I get.
Yeah.
It's my turn.
And yeah.
Gimme. And like all these stories that come out about her that are all true. You know, she's a scarily out of touch, you know, disgustingly rich. And I don't think wealth is disgusting, but I do think that there are people whose wealth turns them into disgusting people.
Look, everybody, Bill Clinton chose other women over Hillary Clinton. Maybe you should too.
If she can't keep her mans happy, how's she going to keep a country happy?
There was a great story about her and Huma Abedin about how Hillary would snap her fingers and say gum and Huma would hand her a piece of gum. It's like, how the fuck do you become a person like that?
Dude, that's like uptight, stick in the ass, like type, like Hollywood typecasting bitchiness.
And also like almost like someone who feels like they should have been born into the, you know, into the time of like feudal society. Like, she, you know, like she's a royal and everybody else is like a peasant, you know, like that to me is true. You know, you want to talk, you know, white privilege or whatever. That to me is true. Like gross privileged behavior is like, oh, I haven't driven a car in years. She doesn't know anything about anything. She's just. A phony, like in, and politics is phony as it is, but she really stands out as being just a complete phony.
Yeah.
I mean, more phony than Trump.
I mean, look, I mean, say what you want about, say what you want
about. We're splitting hairs now.
The thing about the Trump has, it's a different kind of phoniness, I think, with Trump. I think Trump is, because Trump's phoniness is like bravado phoniness, it's not Hillary's trying to act like she's humble.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Trump's phoniness is just in the things that he promises, but his bravado is very honest.
Like, yeah, it's him, right?
Yeah, he's like a, you know, he has a huge ego and he, you know, he says, I'm going to do this. And Hillary's going around like, oh, I'm gonna fight for the little person, and I'm gonna tell those bankers, and they're like, really? Then why don't you show us what you told them in the talks that they paid you $250,000 to give them? Nope, not gonna. You know, that's why the Bernie people are like, release the transcripts. It's like she's giving these talks to like Goldman Sachs and stuff, and supposedly saying, you know, basically like kissing their asses, and they pay her six figures to go speak for them. I'm like, you know, Chelsea Clinton, you know, getting paid $100,000. You know, to do advisory roles for them. They're just a really, just a, you know, the most 1%-y family in America, and just talking like she's a woman of the people, and you know, pulling out her fucking Southern accent when she drops below the Mason-Dixon. You know, she's just the she's the worst.
Yep. And that's the reason why Obama kicked her ass 8 years ago. At least Obama was, you know, like Bernie. You got the feeling that he actually believed at least some of the stuff that he was saying.
Yeah, I still don't think that, even though a lot of Bernie people are just really disgusted with her, the problem with a Trump-Hillary race is that I think that a lot of Democrats, it'll be easier for them to hold their nose and vote for her than it'll be for Republicans to hold their nose and vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Because I also feel like they'll be more scared. I think there's going to be more people like me who say, like, let Hillary win just to flush this sort of Trump tantrum out. Let people, like, see that this isn't a good idea, despite the fact that they really want to. And then let us lose the House and the Senate. Let them appoint fucking liberal justices to the Supreme Court. Let them see the consequences.
If it wasn't for the Supreme Court, I would say yes to everything you said.
That's the biggest problem.
Is that there's like five people on the Supreme Court right now that are probably going to die in the next 4 years.
The thing is, I don't know that he's going to. My problem estimate. Is, I don't know that he's going to do a better job than Hillary appointing people. I think if Trump becomes president, he's going to do whatever feels right in the moment. And if he manages to make some backroom deal with the leadership about a Supreme Court justice, I think he will nominate someone just as liberal as Hillary would. He's not a man of principle, I think. You know, there was that whole thing where he had this off the record conversation with the New York Times where he basically told them this is all an act. A lot of people are saying, like, behind closed doors, he doesn't thump his chest like this. He's just like, he's riling up the fucking the rubes, you know, and they're eating it up, you know, the snake oil selling.
We talked about that 9 months ago when we were doing this.
And the sad part is that I think a lot of Republicans made the mistake of attacking him in a liberal way. And saying, like, he's a racist, he's hateful, he's a misogynist, instead of saying he's phony, he's not going to do any of these things. Now they're doing that. I think it's a little too late. I think they should have done it to begin with. But the news did a very poor job of, like, calling him out on his contradictory statements. I mean, the other day in his foreign policy speech, he was talking about his vocal opposition to the Iraq war. That's a fucking, I mean, a lie, like a blatant provable, like there's records and shit, lie. He was not opposed to it. He did not say the things that he said. He said the opposite things. There's records of him. He said it on TV and in the papers, and nobody fucking calls him out on it.
No, those sources aren't good. They're biased.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And the reason they don't is because it sells. The drama that it stirs up sells. And that's really scary, you know, and I think there's a tiny part of me that almost wants him to become president just so that the people who thought they were going to push him to the forefront of the Republican Party just to sink it are like, oh, shit, what have we done? You know, like we created this monster and now we're going to get him in the Oval Office. I almost want that. And I said, like, what happened today in California, I was like, this generates a lot of Trump spite votes. Like, I know a lot of people who are like, I don't like Trump, but fuck this. I'm going to vote for him now. You're burning American flags and beating people who just want to go to his rallies and stuff. I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, it's definitely the wrong way to be going about all that shit because it just doesn't help.
It's fucked up. Fucked up, gents.
Yeah, that whole "May you live in interesting times" thing is pretty spot on accurate.
Yeah,
it really sucks. like, why can't life be boring again like it was in the 90s?
Yeah, give me.
Liked life a lot better when the biggest problem we had was the president getting a beeger in the Oval Office.
I really hope that for the sake of America, that this presidential election is decided by like 8 people that still have the courage to vote in November.
At the rate we're going, that might be about the only people that vote are those eight.
I know. I said, the funny thing is I said a Trump-Hillary race is going to be an exercise in who generates less apathy among their user voter base.
It's like when you had like those two teams that could never like win a championship, end up meeting each other, and you're like, it's just the battle of who's going to lose less.
Yes, exactly.
Like, that's what this is. This is about to be like if the Buffalo Bills could somehow play the Atlanta Braves for something. Like, that's basically what this election will be.
The Browns versus...
Well, I was going to say the Cubs, but they did almost make it to the World Series last year.
Yeah, and they're kicking everybody's asses. They're 17-5 right now.
They're crazy good. Crazy good starting this year.
They could literally play 500 ball the rest of the year and end up with 93 wins.
Holy shit. That sounds like the kind of thing that even the Cubs can't fuck up.
Well, hey, shut up. They've done it before.
I know it's not even May yet. We got a couple of days to go, but
well, you know, I mean, it's I mean, you know, they, you know, once you get to the postseason, all that shit doesn't matter, you know, like they, I was actually kind of rooting.
Well,
for
you know what was funny is last year I was sitting there going, you know, only the Cubs could win 97 games and come in third in their division. Third best record in baseball. They're third in their division. Damn it.
Jesus. Yeah.
Let's meet back here in 9 months to talk about President Trump. The mass deportations.
Don't blame me. I'm for Kodos.
For Kodos, exactly. Oh, hey, at this point, I would vote for a man-eating alien.
All right. Changing topic here. Here's something we haven't talked about because this happened. All jobs are now open to women in the military.
That whole
military.
Armed forces thing. That's still around.
Wow, that was such a non-event. It was news for about an hour.
Because eventually, you know, everything kind of, what do you call it? Like the, you know, the natural course of things just kind of corrects, because what did they think that all of a sudden women were going to, you know, Navy SEALs was going to be 50% women? Like there is, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, you know how there's this whole transgender bathroom argument that's going on right now?
I've been like trying to forget about it.
Yeah, but I'm saying like before this happened, like 9,999 times out of 10,000 that someone transgendered used a bathroom, nothing happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like now they're trying to. It's the same thing as this. Like in 10 years they're going to be like, wow, it's been 10 years since the military has opened all duties to women, and the traditionally male dominated roles are still going to be male dominated.
Yeah.
It's not the reason that there aren't lots of, you know, Green Beret and Navy SEAL women is not that it was closed to women. It's, we know why. It's because it's an incredibly physically demanding a position, and it's fucking biology. Well, no, stop already.
Well, the funny thing is that they finally opened up all these positions, and what was it about 2 months ago, Neil?
Yeah, just about. And I think right at the beginning of 2016 or so. Yeah. So yeah,
and like six women have signed up.
Yeah, and you know the biggest thing that they were afraid of was that, or you know, that they being like, you know, I don't even know what to fucking call it, but like, you know, that I get the either people on the outside or people, you know, the loud voices in the military were afraid of was that as soon as you open it, there was going to be this floodgate of volunteers, and all of a sudden we were going to have this, we'd be inundated with women that want to be infantrymen and tankers and everything. And they're going to start, you know, beating down the doors to be Rangers and whatever. And it just didn't happen.
But only, well, they didn't do it because the Army boots are not fit for women. That's why they didn't do it. You see that
right.
In the story.
Yeah, there. Yeah, I just saw that today. Like, oh, boots are uncomfortable. I'm effing shocked.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't think I ever owned a pair of fucking boots that were comfortable and was never issued a pair.
I need to find the pictures I took of my feet after my first week in the military. Yeah.
You know what?
In the fucking crazy blisters. There's actually in the Israeli Army, there's a piece of conventional wisdom is the first time you come home from basic, you run your boots over with a car to kind of wear out the leather.
Yep.
I think I know what pair of boots Frank's going to say, because I think I had some of them too. Go ahead.
My greeny jungle boots.
Yeah, you know what? That was going to be my correction, was that, yeah, I had a pair of jungle boots.
No, my greenies.
Yeah. No, I had the same ones.
Yeah. I found a pair of them that fit perfectly. And I kept them damn things until they wouldn't let me wear them anymore. I went through probably 8 soles on the thing. Almost got to the point I could probably ice skate with them, you know. But man, those things were comfortable, and they took a shine.
Yeah, they were comfortable in the field, and you can make them look really good in Garrison.
Uh-huh.
those were some good boots. But I mean, that's like a no shit thing. That article that came out, like, oh, you know, military combat boots aren't good for women, you know, hurt women's feet. Like, yeah, they hurt my fucking feet too.
Yes. Spoiler alert, the military isn't easy.
Yeah, like, you know what else? Yeah, and, you know, 20-kilometer ruck marches hurt my back and my knees.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't like, comfortable for me either.
Yeah, like, badly. I mean, I got fucking tendonitis in my leg, and it was brutal. Like, I had to take, like, I was on painkillers and shit. Like, I was in, like, badly injured. It's not a walk in the park. It's fucking hard.
Yeah, you know, and it has to be. That's part of it. You know, look, that's part of the deal when you sign up.
Look,
but I think the boot thing is such a non-story.
Look, I'm 42 fucking years old. I had my first back surgery at 29 because of the shit that I was doing in the, like, okay. Look, it's not easy. I mean,
it's a job that fucks your body up. When you're
Think about that for a minute, civilians. 29.
I mean, that's like athlete shit right there. Like, if you think of who else has like back surgeries and that kind of thing at that age, and it's professional athletes.
Uh-huh.
You know, the same thing, you know, football players, hockey players, baseball players, those are the ones that get hurt like that and have to have those kinds of surgeries.
Yeah.
Because you're getting, you know, slammed and thrown around, and you're just putting your body through crazy shit all week, and then your games or whatever. It's the same deal. You do enough crazy shit, the body breaks down.
I think at the end of the day, I think my point with the comparing this to the transgender issue was that in the end, there was a lot of talk and a lot of noise about it, and I don't, you know, in the end, I think things are just going to be largely the same.
My biggest problem with this transgender law that North Carolina came out with, is not going to change anything, and here's why. No law changes how people act. Laws are about punishment after the fact, not we're going to make this law that says you can't go into bathrooms, so nobody will go into bathroom anymore. Yeah, how does that work?
Are you gonna
have package checkers outside of every goddamn bathroom?
Ooh,
I hope so.
That's the only way you're going to be able to keep them out of the bathroom.
Well, not even, because what about there's people who are pre-op, and there's people, you know, there's like, you got your Bailey J's of the world, or like, you know, women with who have like dicks. But you're right. It's
what? No. There are no women with dicks. There's only men with tits.
But it's funny.
So we're just going to change all the bathrooms now. They're not going to be male and female anymore. There's going
to
be.
They're going to have to go through with the little mirror you use to put under the carf to check for bottoms. Right.
But it's funny because
you're going to change the bathrooms to dicks and holes. If you got a dick, you use that one. If you got a hole, you go on that one. I don't care.
Yeah. Actually, what's going to happen is bathrooms are just going to be all single stalls, and they're going to be non-gendered. A bathroom, yes.
They do that in like Italy. They have this large room full of bathrooms. You know, like, they're public bathrooms. You walk in, and there's, like, 10 doors on the wall. And each one is its own little private stall.
Yeah.
Everybody goes in their stall, does their thing, comes out, and then they all use the same sinks.
Yeah, but that makes sense. And, you know, to your point about that, Frank, was, like, that, about the law, like, that was the biggest thing that had me going, what the fuck, over this, is that a lot of the same people that when it comes to any sort of gun-related law, we'll say, well, laws don't stop people from committing certain actions.
Bingo.
We're also, but then we're then saying that, like, well, if you don't support this law, then you're subjecting your wives and daughters to this potential danger.
Nobody thinks about the little boys.
I was watching.
Gun laws don't affect anything, but these laws are going to affect actions.
Yeah, I was watching an argument about this today. I was watching an argument about this today, and someone that I know is a big proponent of, you know, gun-free zones. It was like, laws don't stop criminals. And I was like, I can't believe you're using this argument right now. Like, that's – but it's – I mean, it just goes to show you that a lot of people don't think beyond the current debate that they're having.
There's been no law passed ever that by itself has stopped any kind of anything.
Yeah.
All it does is create a punishment for doing said behavior. You know, you can't use the bathroom or we're going to charge you with this. Okay, but I can still use the bathroom at least once, right?
Yeah. So that one time when I really have to use the fucking bathroom, I'm going to go just take right. my, you know, it's like anything else. Yeah, there's drunk driving laws all over the place.
Felons can't felon
go and go, well, I never see a cop on my way home anyway. No,
the law says felons can't have guns. Well, guess what? Yeah, they can until they get caught.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I also
magically make a felon unable to grab a gun.
Well, it's funny you should say that because a funny thing that has happened to me since I've been in this country is I see people always crow about their constitutional rights being violated. Having constitutional rights is not a protection against them being violated. It just means you have a recourse if they are violated.
Exactly.
Like that's the whole point. The point is not,
principle.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't mean the fact that you have, you know, you have Fourth Amendment rights doesn't mean some cop isn't going to search you illegally. It just means that if he does, it will be illegal later. It's like people say, it's like the people who resist arrest and are like, you can't arrest me. It's like, no, you don't understand. That's not how it works. If a cop tells you you're under arrest, then you are under arrest. But if that was an unlawful arrest, then after the fact, you can get them reprimanded. You can sue or whatever, but that doesn't in the moment, that doesn't prevent you from getting arrested. Like it's like people, I think that should be a really basic thing taught in like civics class. You know what I mean? Like your rights don't, I think Louis C.K. said that years ago, that people think that the Constitution promises them a perfect day.
And that's, yeah, it just yeah, doesn't.
And that's no, not at all.
Like, pointing out the fact that that this search is illegal and you can't arrest me, this is illegal. The response to that is not going to be, shit, you're free to go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Could you imagine the cop being like, hold on, let me consult my pocket constitution here. By golly, you're right.
You know, well, you know, but in fairness, Article 4, Subsection 8, Paragraph 2C clearly states right here, sir. And so I don't, you know, all right, let's go to the Supreme Court. You know, that's never going to, you know, it's like Anthony Cumia would always say, you're not going to ever win that argument with the cop.
Not ever.
So just, you know, follow the instructions, do what you're told. And when it's, and when you're done and released, then fight, then that's your opportunity to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And so, you know, again, this bathroom thing, much like many other such issues recently, is mostly about angry people wanting to make their, you know, wanting to make like some kind of political stand. Because like I said, 9,999 times out of 10,000 that someone who's transgendered uses the bathroom of their choice, nobody notices, nobody gives a shit. Once in a blue moon, something happens. But this huge hoopla, I think, in a way does more damage than good. I think it brings stuff to the forefront where people are just like, let people use whatever bathroom. I don't care. I don't give a shit. I'm very, like, you think if I stand in a...
Well, I do give a shit. That's why I don't care what bathroom.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like,
I give if a shit two or three times a week, you know? Come on. I don't want that.
When I take a leak in a public bathroom, I try to be very, like, I don't want any dudes on my dick.
Yeah.
randomly. You know what I mean?
We're men. We have rules.
Yeah, that's right. We've all seen it laid out online with the picture.
Yes, there's no talking in the bathroom. Okay,
you don't talk. You don't take the urinal right next to the right. You know, right directly next to somebody. There's always at least one in between.
And you look straight ahead, maybe down a little bit, but you look straight ahead or at your. You don't look to the left to the right. You do that.
You're like, gonna get eyes. Punched. You stay in your lane. Basically, is right. What that boils down to exactly.
You know, if you're doing that, you're not going to know if the dude next to you has a pair of tits. Come on. Everybody's talking about the women and the little girls. Nobody's saying anything about the little boys that are already having to go to the bathroom with these
First of all, I don't know about you. For me as a kid, and even still as an adult, I'm not totally comfortable with the idea of going to the bathroom in public. Now, if you're a little kid, and all of a sudden this shit gets thrown at you where, like, daddy, why does that man look like mommy? Like, I mean, you're just making it worse on everybody. So just, you just head down, go do your thing, get out of the bathroom, get back along with
exactly.
That's all it should be, but, you know.
That's why they're worried about the women, because they sit in there and they have, like, sewing circles and stuff in the bathroom, you know. That's why they go in groups, you know. Men don't go in groups.
It's true. I've heard
Try that one time. Go to the bar. Go out to the bar with your buddies. Like, get up to go to the bathroom and look at him and say, well, who's coming with me?
I have to go to the bathroom. Frank? No. No. How about you go fuck yourself and go to the bathroom alone, you fucking creep?
I shouldn't have to say anything. You should just know. I got up. You guys should get up with me.
You just get up. All right. Hey, I'll be right back. I got to take a leak. That's the extent of men telling people they have to go to the bathroom. It's not, I have to go to the bathroom. Oh my God, Chrissy, Liz, you have to come with me. Like, it just, that doesn't happen for men. Like, we don't congregate in the bathroom. And if I've made, believe
me, we go in there.
Line to the bathroom at the bar.
Dude, that's the same reason men, when we do things like that, we have a goal. We have an objective. Our objective is to go into the bathroom, empty our bladder, and get the hell out of the bathroom.
Yes. It's unpleasant. It doesn't smell nice. There's dirty strangers in there.
This is why women in the bathroom and women in shopping are the same thing. Because men, if you go to the store, before you go to the store, you usually have a pretty good idea of what you're going to the store for. Correct?
Yes.
You go to the store, you go and you get the thing or things that you went to the store to get, and you leave, right? You don't walk around for an hour looking at stuff going, well, okay, assuming you're not in, like, CompUSA or Micro Center or Comic Books R Us, you know.
Or a kosher deli.
That's anti-Semitic, Neil.
I'm letting my inner Donald Trump out.
Or anime con, you know.
Ah, there you go.
Nailed it.
But I mean, you go down to Wally World and you're like, I need a pack of Wrigley's chewing gum and a 12 pack of rubbers.
And you will leave with exactly one pack of chewing gum and one pack of rubbers.
And hopefully don't
mix the two up.
Dude, really? This sugar-free gum tastes like shit.
Now, here's the thing. My wife...
This gum tastes like spermicide.
Neither of you guys are married, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
My wife, in this world. My wife will tell me, I need to go down to Walgreens and pick up two prescriptions. I'm like, okay, how much are the prescriptions? They're $5 each. Okay, $10. $50 later, and this is normal.
You know,
you wonder why I'm broke all the time.
This is probably the other objection to, like, women in combat arms jobs is that they're going to want to stay at the objective too long. They're not going to know why they're really there. They're going to sit there and talk about the decor and gossip about things, and then the next thing you know, you're being counterattacked.
No. Did you see this? It was from Duffel Blog the other day.
I might have seen it. I don't...
About... hold on. Women battalion commanders.
No, I don't think I saw that.
Hold on, I'm gonna look this up, and I'm gonna read it.
I'm just about to pull up Duffel.
Okay, no, let me read it.
I'll let you introduce. I just want to find it.
Wow, it got so quiet all of a sudden.
I'll
stop talking at the same exact time.
Okay, here it is. This is actually from about 3 years ago, but I think Ben posted it here. Study: infantry battalions commanded by females more likely to stop for directions and arrive late. Marine Corps officials released the results of a months-long war game earlier today, claiming that the study has proven women are capable of serving in combat positions. The war game, Operation Irrational Rage, was planned days after Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta opened combat roles to women. Lieutenant Colonel Jordan O'Neill. No?
No. Why?
Jordan O'Neill.
I don't get it.
What was, what's her name's name in the movie?
Oh, that's right. Was she
Jane?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Commanded
that's funny.
Commanded 3rd Battalion, 2nd Marine Regiment, tasked with finding and destroying an enemy outpost hidden somewhere in the countryside. O'Neill was chosen for combat command after distinguishing herself by replacing physical training with Zumba classes, outfitting her Marines with different uniforms so no one could argue who wore theirs better.
Yes.
And replacing MREs with salads and pints of yogurt. O'Neill organized a long-distance recon, during which she made her executive officer, Major Brad Gramble. I don't get that one.
I think that's just a random name they used on that one.
Carry her rucksack and open jars.
Carry her rucksack and open jars.
Unconfirmed sources say she also refused to wear camouflage face paint, claiming it didn't match her eyes. She also said her feet were hurting, said Gramble, so she commandeered a Humvee but ended up driving it into a ditch. She screamed in frustration, prompting her Marines to mutter, "Must be that time of the month." Still, there were setbacks. That night, 3 Marines were killed in a freak bear attack. Only a day later, Private First Class John Metz awoke to find he had been demoted during the night. When he asked why, Lieutenant Colonel O'Neill only responded, "You know what you did." The battalion was ordered not to speak to PFC Metz until he apologized. The next day, O'Neill screamed at Major Gramble for leaving the seat up on the ammo box used as a toilet. Although he apologized a dozen times, he wasn't forgiven until he found some flowers and gave her his MRE crackers and jalapeno cheese. Finding the objective, O'Neill and Gramble developed a plan of attack. The battalion prepared to attack at midnight, but had to wait 3 hours for O'Neill to get ready. O'Neill led the assault and won a crushing victory, demonstrating that women were just as capable in combat as men. To celebrate the operation's success, O'Neill organized a mandatory shopping trip where everyone was ordered to buy several sets of boots they would never wear. While a Marine shopped, O'Neill sulked and complained nobody noticed her new haircut. That's just mean. It's funny. It's very funny.
That's really good. I just saw another one related to a very recent event that is a Duffel Blog headline. It says, "After Prince death, Airborne admits Maroon Berets actually raspberry." There's that. There's a great paragraph in here. It says, they are, in fact, Raspberry Berets, said Lieutenant Colonel Corey Brown, commander of 1st Battalion, 507th Airborne. The first of the 507th Airborne School was reactivated in 1985, the same year Raspberry Beret was released. Prince was winning Grammys, and with Gorbachev stirring the pot, we were preparing to win wars. It made perfect sense. Sure. And this is where it gets, where's the paragraph? It really gets great. And if we wanted increased student numbers, we needed to show that with us, you don't have to be rich to get the girls, Townsend said. You didn't have to be cool to patrol our world. We had particular skills you'd be compatible with. We just wanted your extra time and your kits, jump kits. We needed you to use our jump kits. If you mix the red, white, and blue of our flag's colors together, it makes purple. And when our paratroopers come soaring down from the skies to enforce freedom and justice, guess what? That's purple rain.
That's good. I like that.
Dude, the Duffel blog is so goddamn good.
You know, one that put me on my back, literally. It's from last week, but it's did you ever wear shirt stays?
No, I was confused about what that was.
Okay. Shirt stays, they attach both to your shirt and to your socks. And they wrap around your leg and they keep your shirt
tight. Oh, like tight and tucked in.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Now, and you got two in the front and two in the back. And they had a tendency to unsnap from usually... From usually the sock.
I just saw the headline that you're referring to. That's goddamn hysterical.
A Marine was killed when his shirt stay unexpectedly detached from his sock and struck him in the right testicle with the full force of Hooke's Law. Staff Sergeant Jeremy Yates, 29, died while instilling a young Marine recruit with, quote, some goddamn intestinal fortitude, end quote, witnesses reported, adding that at the moment of impact, Yates grunted, eyes bulged, and sank to his knees, gasping, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" According to NCIS archives, shirt stay attacks are not unprecedented. Although most incidents merely strike the fleshy part of the inner thigh or the cusp of the buttocks, leaving the victim in a state of shock but alive and intact. Yates' death marks the first shirt stay fatality since the Vietnam War, when Second Lieutenant John Porter was strangled by one by his own men for enforcing asinine uniform regulations during combat. I'd like to say he passed painlessly, that it happened so quickly they didn't feel a thing, said Sergeant Jordan Howard, Yates platoon heavy. But at that speed, right in the nads, who knows?
That last quote.
I just hope that his shirt stay is squared away when Chessie inspects him in heaven, Howard fearfully added. Yates has survived by a K-bar and a pair of silkies.
Damn, that's funny. Very
funny. That put me on my back. Really, that's one of those where I woke up in the morning and I was walking into the truck stop to grab some coffee. And I made the mistake of pulling up Duffel Blog, and that was the first one on the site. And I read it and literally just fell over. I was laughing so hard at
that. Now that you explained what a shirt stay is, that's because I started reading it and I didn't get it. And now that you said that, holy crap, that's funny.
Think about when you see a Marine in Charlie's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally get what you're talking about with that look. Yeah,
that's how you get that look, is with the shirt stays attached to your socks.
I gotcha.
But that's they're not the most. I don't know what the word. The most trustworthy things.
Reliable. Yeah. Right. Oh man, that's good. Holy shit. How long have we been going?
It's about a little over an hour.
I think we don't even have to do a break. We could just
push on. All right.
20 more minutes or whatever. I don't know.
All right. Nerdy shit. What nerdy shit has happened in the last 9 months? Let's see. The Atari 5600 came out. no. Okay. What's happened since the last show?
Oh my God. We had
you got to see this new thing, Zeldas. Have you seen the Zeldas?
The Zeldas.
The
a series of
Zelda,
tubes.
You know, Zelda, the main character is named Link, not Zelda.
So Batman v Superman was terrible.
Deadpool
was awesome.
I did watch that. I finally watched that last weekend.
Deadpool?
Deadpool, yeah.
Oh,
I'm so I got so
I've never laughed so hard in my life.
Yeah, man.
I missed Deadpool in the theaters, and it shows up like in iTunes movies, but it's a pre-order. It's coming out real soon, though.
It's almost out. So
I can't wait, because that was the thing I was most excited about after Force Awakens.
And
Deadpool is the first movie that I did miss in theaters, but also managed to see before it came out.
The beautiful thing about Deadpool was that it was a paradigm breaker.
Ryan Reynolds.
Well, yeah, sure. It's a paradigm breaker. Like am I really gonna plug my own podcast here?
Did you see what they did to the Suicide Squad trailer after Deadpool came out?
Well, I've been doing a solo podcast recently, and I did a whole thing about Deadpool and about how the beauty of it is that it shows that conventional wisdom about movies is just not true. Like, here is a minor superhero. And they made it R-rated.
He was a joke.
It's the biggest R-rated movie globally
ever
of all time, and number two domestic behind Passion of the Christ. It made more money than American Sniper. It made only $10 million less than Passion of the Christ domestically, or made $360 million domestic, and like $790 million worldwide. It blew away everything, and it cost less than $60 million to make.
Oh, the next one won't.
That's incredible.
The next one's going to be, it's not, but you know what? Here's the beauty about the next one, because everyone was like, the next one's going to be giant. And it actually, their whole thing is that I don't think they want you know, the world gets destroyed. I think the whole beauty of Deadpool is that it's slightly more, now it's going to be, the budget's going to be, the effects are going to be better. Some of the effects here are a little rough, a teensy bit. I think they made it work well, though. It's certainly going to be higher profile, but like they spent the money well. They spent it well. They put together an amazing marketing campaign for it.
I loved just counting the fourth wall breaks. But yeah, I literally lost track.
There was a fourth wall break within a fourth wall break. That's like 16 walls. Yeah.
I lost count, I think, at about 30.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
I think my favorite one was when he walks up to the mansion, he knocks on the door, and just the two of them are standing there. Like, it's amazing seeing just the two of you in this big empty mansion. Like, they couldn't afford a budget for anybody else or something.
They couldn't afford any other X-Men. Yeah,
yeah, I heard about that.
There's
scene.
A lot, and we shouldn't spoil it for Neil. Although,
it's been so long, and my coworkers are in love with that movie. So
it's not exactly the kind of movie that you can spoil, because I think the jokes all work, even because I saw it twice, and the second time I still laughed at all of the lines and stuff. It's a lot of it just has really, really good timing.
Never have I watched a movie and then immediately watched it again.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw it in theaters twice, but like,
immediately, like,
yeah, sure. Like, just turn
back
around,
it up.
Turn around.
Beep,
and, yeah.
Beep, beep. All right.
But I mean, it's just fun. And you know what? It's funny, cause I don't like comedies. This is the kind of comedy I live for. Like a movie that's not, cause you know, something like Bridesmaids or The Hangover, like a movie that's billed as a comedy, I typically have no interest in. I like movies that are funny, like situationally funny, like a movie that has something else going on with it, but that's also a funny movie. You know what movie made me laugh?
Actually,
maybe Howl, Krampus. Have you heard of that movie?
No, I've heard of it. You know, actually, Neil, or Noam, I am going to kind of tease one thing for Noam. I think
for Neil,
I think my personal favorite part of that scene is the second time he's in the cab.
Yeah, sure.
when he's got the two of them in the back and he's sure. just and he's having
oh
like
oh my god I can't believe you murdered her.
Yeah, he's having two completely different conversations.
It's fucking great.
Yeah, man. You should really listen to what she's saying. Kill her. And, yeah, no, you don't want to do that. Murder her. No, come on.
And just, it's just great. And like I said, it's very adult. It takes no, it doesn't care that it's not a mass appeal movie. It has like fucking in the ass joke. She fucking pegs him in the butt in the ass with a dildo.
Yeah, she pegs him. Really? Yeah, she pegs the shit. Oh no.
There's fucking like really edgy shit in it. And that's, like I said, I really look, you know, like Marvel makes that shit work really well for it. They don't need to make R-rated movies. Like they found a good formula or whatever, but it is nice to go like, this is a movie for adults. Not everything has to be for the whole family, you know?
Matter of fact,
sometimes it's fun to go watch something and go like, this is adult entertainment.
Right. Neil, you know that service that a couple of Christian groups have come up with where they take movies and make them PG rated or whatever mm-hmm. for the kids? Deadpool would be about
4 minutes long.
4 minutes, yeah.
Well, some people like petitioned Fox to make like a PG-13 cut of it, but like it would be so hard. There's a lot of like,
yeah,
I don't know right how you could.
By the way, you know that you can see his dick. There's a scene in the spoiler alert, whatever. No, when he gets all burnt, when there's the fire at the thing and he fights the guy or whatever and he's all burned and naked or whatever. There's a scene where you just see him fully frontally nude or whatever and he's all burned or whatever.
I wasn't specifically looking for that.
Oh, I know. I just happened to see it the second time around. I was like, uh-huh. Was his cock out? Yikes. But
yeah, Deadpool. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Just really good. And of course, Star Wars, which was just a joy and I own it. And, oh my God. We can fight about this. Okay,
we don't have time to get into this.
I know.
No, we've got plenty of time. I'm going to say that, uh-huh. yes, I love the movie. Did I love it?
Good start.
Did I, like, jizz in my pants love it like everybody else did? No.
Okay, did you see it in the theater?
Yes. I saw it in IMAX.
Okay, let me.
I saw it opening weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the premiere, like I sat in the theater with people in like X-Wing pilot outfits and shit. Let me say this. The biggest complaint I hear about this movie is that it's effectively like a remake of Star Wars. Okay.
I got that feeling a little bit, but it didn't take anything away from the story for me.
No, and I also, you know what? I also, to me, because I heard that coming into it, I felt that it wasn't as matchy-matchy as I was expecting. And then there's a video that people put out that has a lot of like side-by-side shots. And I was like, the thing that set it apart to me was the fact that it had like a double protagonist story. But here's my opinion on this. I think that this is what they had to do for this one.
They did a fine job. Like I said, I love the movie.
You didn't jizz in your pants or whatever. Whatever. Okay. That's fair.
It didn't meet the hype, you know, cause remember I said that going into it, I didn't want to get super excited for it lest it be a Phantom Menace, you know?
Sure. So I'll tell you why I did. I'll tell you why I am that excited about it. Because to me, it signaled very positive things about the future. Like, it showed me that they know they want to make the kind of Star Wars movies that I know that I want. Now, I think that the good grace will run out very quickly if they keep going back to that well. In the same way that Star Trek, when the first Star Trek came out, I was like, this is fucking really, really good. And then the second one came around and they did the complete wrong thing with it, to the point that J.J. Abrams recently came out and was like, I fucked that up.
What?
They they were overly reliant again on references, and they tried to do a, like a weird semi remake of Wrath of Khan, and it was too meta.
Oh, okay,
it
was, okay. Yeah, I wasn't paying attention for a second. I thought you were talking about him saying that he fucked up something in Star Wars. I'm like,
no, Star Trek.
Yeah,
but he's not making Episode 8. He's out. Right. The guy who's making it, Rian Johnson, is actually a really good director. And
I didn't, what? Like I said, I didn't have him. There's things that I liked. I liked the fact that they left it up to people's interpretation of Rey's parentage.
Well, we will find out.
I know we will find out, but they didn't. I mean, they hinted at it a little bit. You know,
there's
depending
a lot
on
of,
how you read certain things, you can be like, is he in? No. Is
there's
he
a
in?
Lot of weird discussions because people said, like, well, stuff should be explained in this movie. The difference is that when Star Wars came out, it wasn't planned as a trilogy. It was going to be one movie.
Right.
And so then later, when they turned it into a multiple movie arc, then they kind of, they had to go in and kind of like retcon stuff here. There was like, we're making a trilogy.
Right.
So the fact that you're not everything is explained.
Well, no, I appreciate
perfectly
that.
Acceptable. Right. I know I some people didn't like that though.
I appreciated it because you knew they weren't going to just make one. I don't know who came up with the idea of we're only going to make one more Star Wars movie. That's it. We're done. Yeah.
Well, LOL.
But no, I appreciated that because we had a big long fight about it on here. Is she Luke's daughter? Is she Han's daughter?
Yeah,
you know, and one, you know, I think I was like
Ben Kenobi's granddaughter. There's a whole thing about whether or not she's,
you know,
she's,
and the only thing Obi-Wan, and the only argument I could come up with was, well, then how come Chewie's still with her? She's got to be related to Han somehow because Chewie wouldn't do that shit. His life debt is paid, or is it?
But so, you know, I'm also totally willing to accept an explanation that isn't a huge, oh, so she's the, you know, it could just be like, oh, her parents were related in this way to the story, you know, her, mm-hmm. her trained with Luke or whatever, some, you know, right. somehow I'm not another Luke, right. I'm your father, I'm your
right.
daughter.
Because my thinking would have been, you know, when I first said that, she's got to be Han and Leia's daughter. And then I'm like, no, she met both of them, and you never got any sign from either of them.
Yeah.
You know, this was like the return of the prodigal daughter, you know?
Yeah, sure. So,
speaking of Star Wars, though, before we get off that topic.
Yeah.
Billy Dee Williams is back advertising for Cult 45.
Oh, well, and he's also going to be in Episode 8. He's gonna, right. Lando's going to be in the next Star Wars movie.
I don't know if you guys... He did that right after Empire, so you guys weren't around to see him there on TV.
Oh, the old Colt 45 commercial.
They got a new one out.
The world moves fast, but change isn't always a good thing when you got it right the first time around. Because sometimes a true original doesn't need to change a thing. It works every time.
So there you go. Just a little shorty. He was a handsome man.
Yeah, that was his appeal.
Yeah. Well, he's got the voice to go along with it too. That's the shitty thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really honestly not fair that, you know, he could be a good-looking gentleman and have that golden voice that's perfect for, you know, pitching stuff to people.
Sure. Anyway, the bottom line is Episode 8, in a sense, Rogue One, not even, because it's, no. You know, it's like a prequel, but Episode 8 is in many ways more important than Force Awakens. Force Awakens was important because it needed to reestablish fan trust in the brand. Now that that's established, they really need to not fuck it up. Like, they really need to be like, okay, here's something that isn't just a rehash, but also good.
Well,
the thing that
I appreciated most about Episode 7 is, you know, I was worried that they were going to bring in the original cast for like a minute, and just they were just going to be there for like a token. Look, everybody, here's, you know, you know, it's Han Solo. Like, you know. No, they actually made him pretty damn integral to the story.
Yes.
Yes. I appreciate it.
I mean, Han in this one and supposedly Luke in the next one is going to be sort of more central to the story. And to me, another big aspect was the level of care. They built 105 animatronic puppets,
wow,
you know, whatever creatures and stuff. They did because I got the Blu-ray, the Force Awakens Blu-ray, and there's a couple of really good, behind the scenes featurettes. The level of effort to me was really important just because it shows, that they're not just gonna they're not resting on their laurels. They're not saying we got Star Wars, you know, it's an easy money, whatever.
You know, my only problem with the movie.
Yeah.
And Neil, you're going to agree with me on this. Whose bright idea was it to take the sewer worker down for a fucking raid?
Well, he lied. Well, he lied.
Yeah, he lied his way into.
Because he was going to go rescue Rey. That was his thing. He was like, sanitation. And he was like, oh, I'm just here to rescue Rey. And he was like, then what are we supposed to do? That was one of my favorite.
No. I'm talking about the very beginning.
Oh, no. Okay, so that was. So here's the impression that I got. The impression that I got was that that was his first. That he got. He was converted to a. One of two things. Either he was converted to being a field person, and that was his first, you know, mission in the field, or kind of on a carrier or whatever, where everybody has an additional duty. Everybody's an infantryman or whatever.
Okay.
But then one person is a whatever mechanic and
we're short. You're getting reclassed or. You know, everybody's got the same training. Yeah, whatever. You work in sanitation, but we need somebody for this raid. You're coming with us.
No, right. A patrol. You know what I mean? Because I know that happened.
I mean, that's how the Marines work. I just don't picture the stormtroopers doing that.
Because they're grunts. Because this wasn't we're going to go fight a battle. It was we're going to go round up some fucking civilians and murder them. You know what I mean? It wasn't, they didn't really.
I still had a problem with that. You know, I mean, I'm like, why is this his first? Come on, guys.
I got the impression that was his first time in the field.
Right.
And it was, and it was a nothing mission. It wasn't something important. I mean, it was.
Well, I get that it was a nothing mission, but he was also standing around by himself with no supervision on his first raid.
Well, there were a group of them. They just,
I didn't like that.
Frank? Think about it this way.
But how come he's the only sewer worker down? Well, at least that we know of.
Right. We don't know.
That's part of it. We don't know
was
that.
I was going to say, was this the sanitation department? Just went down
there. It was one of those things I need 50 bodies for this raid. Well, fucking take second platoon. They're a bunch of shit bricks anyway.
I can go with that.
They can't screw this one up.
I can go with that. I like
well, and also,
all right, everybody, just go down there and shoot everybody not wearing white.
Well, look, I'll tell you what, I don't know how that shit works in the U.S. military, but for instance, on my base, there were people of, there were kitchen workers and sanitation workers and then various people who did various jobs and you had your weekly duties. And one of them was you had to be there was a unit that was on call, a group of 12 people, and you had to sleep in your uniform and you had to carry
your
helmet and your vest around it. And if there was an alarm, you were the 12.
Yeah. We call that REACT.
Fast reaction force or whatever.
Right. Yeah. REACT.
And it was they needed that. There was alarms, we need to do a thing quickly.
Right. But you also don't use the sanitation guys to be react.
Oh, and I don't know. In my base, they did. Okay, everybody did it. You know, everybody had once a week.
No. Well, that's because you lived in a war zone.
I mean, it didn't strike me as that odd. I mean, once we start nitpicking at that to that extent.
That wasn't nitpicking. That was my, when they turn around and they said, what is he? He's sanitation.
what in the hell was he doing on that raid?
Well, I also,
I actually yelled that in the theater.
Also, sanitation, I assumed meant not that he was a janitor. Like
no,
that he
I was thinking like he was like a plumber or something
tech
like that.
Or something, you
no,
know?
I thought he was a plumber. Yeah, because I saw that. Oh, it's racist. Damn janitor went in. No.
Oh, really? No, I thought that to me that was a meta joke because one of the big sort of fan running fan jokes is about like the, you know, the bathrooms on the Death Star or whatever. It was like it's one of those is it Clerks or Clerks 2? They have this whole discussion about like
contract and all the private contractors on the Death Star.
Exactly. And so it turned into this sort of running joke about like, you know, where are all the, you know, the people who like, where's maintenance, you know, like Death Star maintenance or whatever. I saw, to me, that was almost like a nod to the fans. Like, you see, there's a guy who's a maintenance guy.
They called it sanitation because of, you know, Han, Chewie, Leia, and Luke getting stuck in the garbage.
Yes, well, then
garbage
they also, shoot, that's yeah. what they say. Captain Phasma was like, is there a garbage disposal here? Yep.
No,
that was
one
of my favorite jokes.
Yeah, no, I saw people.
Goes like, how are we supposed to get the shields down? He's like, I don't know. We'll use the Force. And Han's like, that's not how the Force works.
No.
And then Chewie goes like, and Han goes, oh, you're cold?
It was a good little bit of banter that worked because it just, you could see the two of them being that way even in that kind of situation. It didn't feel forced or anything.
Yeah, they had a few.
No,
of those,
I enjoyed the movie. Overall, I enjoyed the movie. It wasn't an episode one.
Yeah, I mean, which obviously that's not a very high bar to have to clear.
Right. Exactly. Now, where would I put it in the overall pantheon of Star Wars lore in like my favorite? Well, I'm weird because I didn't like Empire Strikes Back as much as I like A New Hope. You know, everybody else wants to see Empire Strikes Back is the best of the movies, and I didn't think so. It was my second favorite.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. You know, to me, it's also hard to place them on the same. To me, all the,
right.
the even Jedi has, like, it's such an important like movie from my childhood. It's hard for me to look at it back now and go like, oh, it was all about the toys and it was about appealing to kids. Cause again, I was a kid. Right. So obviously it appealed to me.
It is. And matter of fact, you know, it's a shitty TV show, but if you, there was a scene in a TV show called How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, sure.
Where he's dating a girl that didn't like Ewoks. And he reasoned by the fact that she didn't like Ewoks, that she had to be like 50 years old. And he came up, hold on, I'm going to see if I can find it, because he actually comes up with, you know, it's a clinical fact that if you were older than 7 when Return of the Jedi came out.
Yeah, you don't like Ewoks. You're right. It's, I mean, that's a fair assessment. And so, like I said, I think episode 8 is going to be a really crucial. I'm very curious about Rogue One because the way they bill it, that it's going to be like a war movie. They got a lot of the technical crew from Zero Dark Thirty on it, which I also watched recently, and it's pretty good. I liked it.
Oh, I like Zero Dark Thirty.
Here it is.
I thought it was
good. Not that exciting. What's really exciting is the financial size desperately need.
No, I.
Did you like Zero Dark Thirty, Frank?
Did I watch it?
You should. It's pretty good.
I don't think I watched it.
Oh, okay. But yeah, a lot of the technical crew from it is working on Rogue One, which I think might be good. Like, I think one of the best parts of that movie is the actual Bin Laden raid, which I later found out after I watched the movie is actually in real time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the scene in the movie is exactly how long it was in real life.
That I didn't know.
I know, right?
I know that there's controversy about what actually happened and the backstory versus what the movie portrayed, but I still thought it was a good movie.
Sure. But
because we may never know exactly what happened.
Of course, to me the main point of that movie,
you know, decades still.
Well, to me the beauty of that movie was that you know, for years people were like, how can we find that guy? How can, and this movie does a really good job of showing how difficult it was just to do it,
yeah.
How much just grunt work and this daily grind of trying to, you know, scrape information, try to figure this out, and how it took years and years of just, you know, just like a very unrewarding, difficult work.
Yeah. Like just from the slightest scraps of intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I thought the raid scene was very good because it was very, light on heroism and very heavy on realism. It wasn't like kicking down doors, cover me. You know, it was more like slowly picking them apart room by room, moving very quietly, doing everything very professionally and very carefully. I really liked that. And also there's one scene in the very beginning of the movie, because, you know, this movie was criticized for being pro-torture, quote-unquote, which it wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't get that impression at all. I mean, those scenes were pretty fucking brutal.
And it wasn't the reason it's called pro-torture is that it doesn't take a specific stance against torture, which is then perceived as being pro-torture. But there's one scene right at the beginning of the movie where I was like, I'm going to like this movie. And it's the movie starts. Oh, Frank, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, so the movie starts in like a CIA black site, okay? And Jessica Chastain is there, and the CIA interrogator is there, and they're interrogating this guy. And he's like strung up on the wall with like ropes. And they come in, and they're wearing like masks, and they tear him down. And they're like, this guy straddles him, and he starts yelling like, you know, who was in the Saudi group? Who was in this? And he says to Jessica Chastain, get me the bucket. You know, get me the pitcher of water in the bucket. And she gets at him. And they start waterboarding him, and she's standing off to the side, like horrified. And then they string him back up on the wall, and he says to her, like, stay here. And they go out, and the guy's like coughing and sputtering. And he says to her, you have to help me, to Jessica Chastain. Your boss is crazy. You got to help me. And she looks up at him and goes, you can help yourself. And just tell us what we need to know. And I was like, ah, I'm going to like this movie. Cause you see that she's horrified by the process of it. But she's not some fake moralist in the movie. She's just like, the minute he's like, you got to save me, she's like, just tell us what we want to know. And this ends right now.
It's no Camp X-Ray.
Yeah. And exactly. Oh, did you end up watching that?
Fuck no.
With Kristen Stewart? Or
no, I didn't watch that.
It was almost direct on demand.
With her one face and 1,000 emotions.
Yes, exactly.
No, I know.
No, I've watched,
I don't hate myself that much.
Just like normal, I've watched very few movies. I saw Star Wars. I saw Deadpool. I saw Age of Ultron.
It was all right. Did you see The Martian?
No.
That's a good movie.
And really, those three movies are about all I've seen since we've talked last.
Because I watched that, and I watched American Sniper too, which was.
Oh, I did watch that.
It was all right.
It was all right.
A little slow in a couple of parts, but.
Oh, that's fine. It was all right. It was a good watch. It wasn't like.
And it's refreshing to watch movies like that don't shoehorn in something about America being evil. It's,
right.
It's refreshing.
Even if the storyline itself was crap. It was still an entertaining movie.
Yeah, and but it's not. It's not. It's you know, because there's this effort that's always made to be so anti-jingoistic and moral equivalence and stuff. Here was just like, look, there's this dude. He's a good dude. He cares about America, and he cares about his comrades or whatever. And there's this bad guy that he wants to. Take care of, and he eventually takes care. You know what I mean? It's just like a. Right. It's pretty simple.
Well, what I mean by the storyline being crap is that most of the things you saw in that movie didn't actually happen.
It's all
is
very
what I mean. Right.
Dramatized or whatever. Right. Obviously,
but yeah, I mean it was a decent movie. The only movie that I'm looking forward to is Suicide Squad.
Sure.
But that's actually because my wife actually wants to go see this. She's normally she hasn't really been interested in any Marvel movies since Iron Man. Except I finally made her watch Guardians of the Galaxy, and now she loves Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, nice!
And that's I'm looking forward to the sequel to that, which is being filmed right now. Civil War coming out next.
But what I mean is, she's not interested in the Avengers or any of that.
Sure. But, I mean, to me, Guardians was like a Star Wars. When I watched that, I was like, Star Wars is gonna just got its thunder stolen by a movie that isn't Star Wars.
Matter of fact, now I'm probably, because we mentioned it, I'm probably going to go upstairs and watch Guardians of the Galaxy again tonight.
That's a movie I also own. It's someone to me defined it very well as someone said, it's like Star Wars except everybody's Han Solo. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's what it is.
There's a great little joke on the Cleveland show where they're at a Comic Con and Cleveland Jr. makes a joke about that, about Firefly, or he's like, he goes, you can't have a ship full of Han Solos, because if everyone's Han Solo, then nobody's Han Solo.
All right. So, but yeah, Suicide Squad, and then Civil War is coming out next month.
Next month, but it's actually next weekend.
Yeah.
Is it next weekend? Shit. Oh, Suicide Squad coming out later in a month.
I think
Suicide Squad's coming in August.
Oh, I thought that was like
I thought June. It was at the end of May.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think that's also, it's only in August.
Okay, so we probably
still got like X-Men Apocalypse before that.
Okay. Warcraft. I think X-Men Apocalypse is the one that's in
August.
June.
August 5th is the...
Okay. All right, so I guess we're probably not doing a show next weekend.
Oh, I can't anyway. I'm going to be down in the Great Salt Lake.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm actually going to USA Weightlifting Nationals and the Rio Olympic Trials.
You just
going
to watch?
How about that?
Yeah, we're going down. The club that I lift with, where a few of us are taking a trip down there, and we're also volunteering for the event, so that's going to be kind of cool. Hoping we stick around long enough, because the Olympic Trials are the last like two sessions on Sunday. I don't know what time we're going to want to come back up here. Okay. It's about a 5-hour drive, but it'll be a good trip. That should be fun. Yeah. Hoping to meet some future Olympians.
Yeah.
Or some past ones, at least. So, yeah, it should be a good time. So, can't do next week, which means I'm also not going to see Civil War next weekend. Because I can't imagine being in Salt Lake City going, hey, guys, want to go to a movie?
I mean, well, okay.
You know that thing we could totally do back home?
All right. I don't know. I mean, I thought Ultron was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, Ultron was pretty good.
I broke my rule about going opening weekend to go watch that.
I've been going to opening weekend recently more often.
I think Ultron is the only movie that I've done. Matter of fact, I lied when I said I went to Star Wars opening weekend. I went the second weekend.
Oh.
I think so far, Star Wars is one of the few movies, one, where I've gone opening weekend, and two, it was the first time I went to the movies by myself. Because I said, no way am I waiting for any of my friends to pick a night to want to go.
Really, like, ever?
I would, dude, there's two things I hate doing by myself. It's movies and going out to eat.
Well, you say, that's the thing. Is usually I would go to a movie like that with Matt and Pete. But Star Wars was one of those movies where they bought, the Thursday night midnight tickets.
Yeah, sure.
And went. And, I'm on the road and driving, so I obviously can't do that.
I mean, I
actually saw Star Wars at the $5 Saturday, 9:30 in the morning. Pete woke up, or I woke Pete up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I sent him a text, I said, hey, Star Wars, 9:30. All right, call Matt. Matt, Star Wars, 9:30. We literally just walked into his house.
Grabbed him and went.
Grabbed him. Said, Matt, wake up. We're going to see Star Wars. What the fuck time is it? 9:30. All right, hold on.
All right. Well, we'll have a lot to talk about next time. Civil War and maybe some other shit.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to...
If we do a show next weekend, it probably will be a doo-doo show, but anyway... If we do a show next weekend, it'll be me, Noam, and Ben. Otherwise, we won't do a show next week.
We'll see. I'm not sure. Yeah. We'll talk. I know. I'm starting Japanese classes again this week.
We're probably just going to assume at this
turning
point.
Japanese, are you?
We are going to try.
I really think so.
We are going to try to do a show at least once or twice a month, everybody. So don't worry. It's not going to be 9 months to the next show, I hope.
Yeah, probably not.
The idea is to do these somewhat regularly now.
Right.
Every couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, every couple of weeks, yeah.
Semi-regularly. All right,
little guys. Semi-formal, informal.
Well, it was good to talk to you guys again. We literally have not talked
since that last time.
We've emailed back and forth.
We email a bunch and like talk on Facebook and shit, but right. Like just talk. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this was good tonight. This was fun.
Yeah, man. All right, guys.
All right, we're out.
See ya.
Bye. Enjoy the show.
9 months ago, I announced my candidacy for president. The journey has been an unbelievably interesting one and fascinating, but it's also been a real wake-up call. Our country is totally divided. There's so much hatred. So that's what I made my campaign about. I said the craziest things I could think of.
He referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee you.
Things you never heard a candidate say.
I love the poorly educated.
But I will tell you this, and I can say it with certainty. I had no idea it would go this far. No matter how insane I got, millions of you showed up to support me. Me, the guy who hosted The Apprentice and sold steaks. But enough is enough. It has to be stopped. It has to be stopped now. April Fool's America. I'm not really running for president. It was a joke. You're so stupid, it's mind-boggling. It really is. Now go vote for my friend Hillary Clinton and make America great again. I can't believe you bought these crappy hats.